Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Houston to speak with Ben DuBose of Locked On Rockets about the Clint Capella signing and the potential impact Carmelo Anthony may have on this team if and when he joins the squad. We'll go to Cleveland to speak with Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs about the Kevin Love extension and what that means for his future in Cleveland. And lastly, we'll go to San Antonio to speak with Jeff Garcia of Locked On Spurs about the recent comments from DeMar DeRozan about his unhappiness with the trade, what that means and how he will fit in with Coach Greg Popovich and the San Antonio organization. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On NBA, the Monday edition. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd, and I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast and the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. Go ahead and find me on Twitter at redrock_Beeble. We're going to be talking Rockets. We're going to be talking Cavs. We're going to be talking Spurs today in today's show. So, of course, let's get to it. Let's talk to the host of the Locked On Rockets podcast, Ben DuBose. A couple of interesting things happening in Rockets land at the moment. The number one of those is finally we have a resolution to the Clint Capella contract drama. Not that it was necessarily a huge drama, but there was always a level of, minor concern. Will he take the qualifying offer? Are the Rockets lowballing him? In the end, he signs a 5-year, $80 million dollar contract with the Houston Rockets. It seems on the surface some people will go and compare it to contracts that Rudy Gobert got or that Steven Adams got and see it looks a little bit under the value of those even compared to say something that Zach LaVine got from the Sacramento Kings / Chicago Bulls. But in the market that was out there for Capella, Ben, it was hard for him to do too much better than that with not many or actually no other teams having the facility to offer him a big contract that the Rockets would be forced to match.
Right. It was a perfect storm for Houston, in my estimation, because the only real leverage Capella had was that qualifying offer. And while it sounds nice on paper, he gets his unrestricted free agency a year from now. Had he gone that route, look, to turn down 80, possibly 90 million with incentives in guaranteed money for a $4.7 million deal on a one-year contract. Look at what happened with Nerlens Noel a couple of years ago. That was just far too risky of a route for him to take, and ultimately, because of the market and not having much money on it, it was clearly to the Rockets' advantage. And if you had asked me even going into free agency that he would get under $20 million per year, I would have been very surprised. But ultimately, what few teams had cap room weren't willing to spend it on Capella because everyone felt pretty strongly the Rockets would match. And ultimately, it could be a pretty important savings, whatever that annual amount ends up being, because we have seen at least some luxury tax concerns to this point. Certainly, I think we can agree it played a role in the Rockets' willingness to let Trevor Ariza walk to Phoenix. And even though they're willing to pay the luxury tax, the fact is, with all the money they've handed out this offseason, to get Capella at a few million dollars less per year than I think most people expected, if you had asked me in June, I would have guessed maybe $21, $22 million a year would have been a fair annual amount considering the market. So for the Rockets to get him at effectively about $17 million a year, it's pretty good because it's a franchise that, you know, it's not that they're cheap, as evidenced by the money they've handed out this offseason, but at the same time, it's also not like you can expect them to just go into the tax and pay whatever they have to keep this team together. Clearly, there is a limit to their resources, and getting Capella on a deal this friendly because of the market, it's a pretty perfect storm for Daryl Morey, the front office, and of course, new owner Tillman Fertitta.
We've seen, as I said, people saying, oh yeah, it seems low with these other contracts that other players are getting, but there's also other reactions of people saying, why would you want to pay a traditional center this much money who's struggled at times against teams like the Warriors, which I don't necessarily agree with, but to me, that's a fair indication that the deal is spot on where it needs to be. Again, the $20 million mark, I thought, is what we'd be looking at for Capella, but coming in at this level, when there's people saying it's too low, people saying it's too high, it probably is the right amount for Clint. He's still young. He's still obviously improving and gets to grow and develop his game with this team in a perfect fit type situation for him and for the Rockets as they look to recover from a few off-season losses to move forward and once again challenge the Golden State Warriors. But Ben, there is another move that it hasn't quite been made official just at this point that looks like it's on the cards. I would be pretty stunned at this point if it doesn't happen, and that is the eventual signing of Carmelo Anthony to the Houston Rockets, which looks like it will be a veteran's minimum contract. Melo had his struggles last season. They were well documented, and he looks to come across and probably, I would say almost definitely, fill that role in the starting five vacated by Trevor Ariza. Now, let's start with how you see a potential Melo fit. There were concerns last season with how's Chris Paul, how James Harden going to fit together. I thought that was overblown. Clearly it was. But then adding Melo into that mix, how does that work? How does his history with Mike D'Antoni fit in there? And how do you see the Melo a potential addition to this team going?
Defensively, I'm a little more optimistic than most. Certainly not expecting him to be a major difference maker, but we were talking about Clint Capella a couple of minutes ago. One of the reasons that makes Capella so valuable, even in today's NBA, where traditional centers are losing at least some of their relative importance in a lot of situations, is because in Houston's switching scheme, the ability for Capella to go out and even pick up a Steph Curry type or a Kevin Durant on switches for a few moments, if that's what they need, gives Capella an extra dose of value. As far as Melo, the numbers actually grade him out as being mediocre in terms of switches. He's a guy throughout his career, we've always seen that he likes to, you know, rather than fight through the screen, he likes to go under and switch. And so he's certainly not going to be a positive defender, but with as much as the Rockets switch, there's potentially a path for him to be mediocre rather than bad. And we were talking about 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony. If you could even make him passable defensively, then that's a starting point, because certainly offensively, you know what you're going to get in terms of his shot creation ability. There are some questions with his efficiency, but I think if you're the Rockets, you just have to hope that between the presence of Chris Paul, his friend, a more traditional point guard getting to him in his shooting pockets, so to speak, and also, as you mentioned, the contract, the veteran minimum contract. For the first time in his career, I think Melo is staring at his basketball mortality. He's having to consider that. So I think that may get him to buy into a number three role in a way that maybe he couldn't a year ago at Oklahoma City when he was effectively on a two-year, $54 million deal. So it's not going to be a perfect fit in terms of the starting lineup. My guess is that Carmelo ultimately does start, and clearly there are some things he can do offensively that Trevor Ariza could not. But ultimately, how does that mesh with the ball handling of Chris Paul and James Harden? That's what remains to be seen in terms of shot selection, willingness to defer, those types of things. But on paper, between the contract, between the presence of Chris Paul, there's at least a path to where you could see it working out, the fit being a little better in Houston than it was a year ago at Oklahoma City.
Yeah, look, that is true. I think that's a huge point, is the quality of passes that Melo... Now, he missed a ton of shots last season in Oklahoma City. Right. We're all well aware of that. But Russell Westbrook, Paul George, the level of passing from those guys is considerably inferior to what you're getting from Chris Paul and James Harden. So they can find him in better spots. And you also have to look at what Melo did last season. I think for a guy of his ability and his ability to score and shoot, he's not going to miss as many shots as what he did last season. So I think there will be an uptick there. I think that something that people are looking at is a recent interview with Carmelo Anthony, where he seemed to, again, just display maybe a lack of self-awareness or a lack of... You said he's, you know, accepting his basketball mortality, and I think that is true to a degree, but there was also, you know, talks, again, people referencing whether he's ready to come off the bench or take a lesser role, and it didn't quite seem that he was there yet. Is that something of a concern? Because we know that, you know, Melo's reluctance to accept maybe his position in the standings of a hierarchy of players on the team can be an issue. Is that something that you do worry yourself with?
A little bit, yeah. It's something where it's so easy for interview comments to get pulled out of context, but until he proves it otherwise on the court, it's fair game to wonder about that. Now, the reason that I'm a little more optimistic than most, I think going to a 65-win team in Houston with the reigning MVP in James Harden, it's a little bit more of a, I would say, Olympic-type vibe than some of even Oklahoma City a year ago. And, of course, I'm not willing to say that he's going to be Olympic mellow, but I think there's obviously such a strong supporting cast around him that I think potentially it's easier to get him to buy in a way that certainly not in New York, but I would say not even in Oklahoma City a year ago, was there the strong infrastructure in terms of the leadership on the court, off the court, and Mike D'Antoni. So if it's ever going to work for Carmelo, if he's ever going to get it, this would be the situation. The other small point that I would make about usage, there are some points in the game, especially against upper echelon teams, where I think you could run your offense through him. One big boost I would say that Houston gets, assuming they conclude this in the next week or two, which I think is fair at this point to expect now that three ways done, is that by getting him a month and a half, nearly 2 months, even before training camp, you get a couple of months to talk to him to work through these issues. Whereas Oklahoma City, basically acquiring him on the start of training camp last year, it was kind of just a shotgun wedding thrown together at the last moment, and Billy Donovan seemed kind of overmatched by the dynamics. So I think in this case, Houston has a lot longer to plan for it. And there are some times during the game, I would say early in the second, early in the fourth quarter, if you look at how the Rockets played against the Warriors and truly upper echelon teams last year, they weren't as efficient in those minutes that Harden was not in the game. So I think potentially if you sell him, he didn't have to come off the bench, you can stagger the minutes, but sell him on owning those minutes that Harden is not in the game, you can run the offense through him and hide his defensive deficiencies a little bit more because you're going up against bench guys. And so I think that might be the best chance you can get to a compromise scenario of still getting him a lot of shots, a lot of touches to where he may feel like the offense is running through him at times, but at the same time it not being, you know, a big difference relative to the strength that made you a 65-win team a year ago.
It's definitely going to be fascinating to watch as we see this all unfold, and this Melo situation should be sorted, as you said, in the next couple of weeks. Capella's back. Melo's going to be joining. It's going to be a somewhat new-look Rockets team as they look to push forward and take it one step further in this coming season. Ben DeBose will have all that info on Locked On Rockets all through the off-season and the preseason, and of course, the regular season. Ben, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA once again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Now it's time to bring in Jeff Garcia, the host of the Locked On Spurs podcast. Of course, about a week or so ago now, Kawhi Leonard was traded from the San Antonio Spurs, but they have received DeMar DeRozan back in that deal. And there's been some comments from DeMar recently, Jeff, over the past couple of days, talking about his feelings on the trade and how he's been reacting to it. How have people in San Antonio and Spurs fans been reacting to the comments from DeMar about his unhappiness about leaving Toronto? Is there any reticence there in accepting him now in San Antonio with that sort of feeling from DeMar that he didn't want to be leaving Toronto?
Actually, no. I think the pulse of the fans is they're showing a lot of patience right now. They understand, you know, 9 seasons in Toronto at the look at your life. He was just a teenager when he was drafted by the Raptors. So there's a lot of patience. It seems to be the pulse of the fans are welcoming him into San Antonio with open arms. I think it's just going to take time. Even though it's been days since the trade, you know, the dust is starting to just settle in. Bad breakup, Josh. your ex took off to a different spot. This is the case of Kawhi to Toronto. And, you know, you're just not over that yet after exactly how bad of a fallout it was. And then from the flip side of that, DeMar coming to San Antonio, yeah, he's saying the right things in interviews at Team USA and following the trade. You know, he loves Pop. He loves the system. His best friend plays for San Antonio, Rudy Gay. And there's a lot of Toronto's connections to San Antonio. I mentioned Rudy Gay. Even Matt Bonner, who played for a while in Toronto. There's Marco Bellinelli, him and DeMar, they played together. I think right now it's just a transition phase that everybody's going through, and DeMar is taking it a little more time to get used to it. He himself said that it hasn't hit him yet that he's a Spur, but it will hit him soon once he's into training camp and putting the jersey on. But the pulse of the fan is simply this. They're having a lot of patience right now, and they're going to welcome him with open arms.
The interesting thing, I think, here in San Antonio is when LaMarcus Aldridge signed a couple of years back, he seemed to have some difficulty adjusting to being the number two guy behind Kawhi Leonard. We heard about his trade requests, and then him and Popovich sat down and had these discussions to try and get him back on board. And then last season, he improved a lot, but how much of that was due to the Popovich discussion or due to the fact that he was the number one guy because Kawhi Leonard only played those 9 games, so everything was running through LaMarcus last season. So now that DeMar DeRozan comes in, how is DeRozan's arrival going to impact Aldridge? Will he start to become a little more pouty if plays are run for DeMar and he isn't the clear-cut number one guy that he was last season? Do you think that's a legitimate concern, or do you think that LaMarcus is over that now? Or will he be demanding that I'm still the number one guy, and will that in turn affect DeRozan and his offensive output?
That is a great question, and a question I've been thinking about since the trade went down. Look, LMA is the number one guy right now for San Antonio. There is no doubt about that. You know, the offense begins with him and it ends with him. And that's what we saw last year. The offense ended with him and began with him. If he wasn't going, then the Spurs weren't going to go on the offensive end. With DeMar DeRozan coming in, and I think LMA would likely embrace that, because here's a guy who averages 20-plus points per game in his career and can shoulder some of that offensive load that LMA doesn't have to worry about into next season. You toss in the fact that they got Rudy Gay back and re-signed him. He's going to likely be the starting small forward. And you bring in a guy like Marco Bellinelli, who at least last season with Philadelphia played remarkably well on the offensive end. So I think there's going to be a little bit more balance. Now, as for that whole reputation that LaMarcus has regarding being the number one guy or not, we saw that in Portland. Rumors back and forth between him and Lillard, and can they coexist, and he can't be the number one guy. I think that may be a little overblown a little bit. I think in San Antonio, one thing they stress, Popovich, check your ego at the door. Look, LaMarcus Aldridge is going to have to keep, if that's true that he has this beef with another player next to him, he's going to have to check it, because this is a situation where DeMar DeRozan can help him. He can help him make his offensive game better. You know, DeMar DeRozan is a legitimate mid-range threat. He's a guy that can create his own shot. And if he can make space for LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan's assists can go up. Last season, he averaged a career high in assists, and I think that'll help him as well. And LaMarcus Aldridge isn't going on the offensive end, and DeMar DeRozan can. So I think they're going to be able to coexist. I'm not saying that DeMar DeRozan is a horrible player. He's not. He's a good player. He's a really, really good player. Is he on the Kawhi Leonard level? No. But I think that notch below the Kawhi Leonard level, your Durant level, your LeBron levels, is actually beneficial for LaMarcus, knowing that he doesn't have to share spotlight with a mega star, a superstar. I'm not knocking DeMar DeRozan at all. He is a good player, quality player. But LaMarcus doesn't have to share the spotlight with a mega star. So I think that will help him down the road.
Do you think that obviously DeMar DeRozan is with Popovich at the moment in a Team USA camp at the moment? Do you think that's going to help? And the other parties, and we saw this stat, and I think it was put out there today, that the entire projected Spurs starting five hit as many threes last season as Joe Ingles did for the Utah Jazz, which was about 200 threes, which is obviously not ideal when you're going into having this starting line with no three-point shooting at all. So do you think that Popovich will be looking to change that up, getting DeMar to feel more comfortable, forcing LaMarcus Aldridge to get more out to the perimeter, or will they just run with this basically mid-range heavy offense, really zagging while the rest of the league is zigging?
I think you're absolutely right. The mid-range game is going to be big time in San Antonio next season between LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. You also throw this in, too. I mentioned earlier that DeMar is saying the right things. One of the right things he said is he's going to be playing with LaMarcus Aldridge, who he self said that he might be a better big than he played with since Chris Bosh. So a situation where everybody can benefit on the court. Look, Aldridge is going to have a guy who's a dynamic player. He didn't really get to sample that as much because of the Kawhi Leonard situation. He maybe played one season with him, and at that, Kawhi Leonard still didn't play a full 82 games because he's always been perpetually hurt in his time in San Antonio. So if DeMar DeRozan, and he has been proven a durable player, and LaMarcus Aldridge was durable last year, he played a bulk of the season, I think these two guys are going to be fine. And yeah, I mean, is it going to be a mid-range happy game? Of course it is. Is it going to be the Spurs zigging when everybody else is zagging? Of course. But this is a Popovich-led team, and he's getting a jump start with DeMar out in Las Vegas with Team USA. So not only does Pop and DeMar start to begin that relationship, on a personal level and on the court as well, he already established that with LaMarcus Aldridge after their infamous chat right before LaMarcus Aldridge threatened that he wanted to be traded. So you got calm waters between LaMarcus Aldridge and Pop. You're beginning a relationship in Las Vegas between DeMar and Pop, and you fuse that together in a few months, out of preseason games. I think this could be the beginning of something great. Now, as far as the trade is concerned, yeah, the biggest things that I don't like is the Spurs lost a lot of defense between Kawhi and Danny Green, but I think the offensive end definitely took a boost, and with all three of those guys on the same page, LMA, Pop, and DeMar, I think the Spurs could be one of the better offensive teams next season.
It's going to be interesting to watch how it all fits in, how this spacing challenged lineup runs, how DeMar adjusts to being traded, how Aldridge deals with the arrival of DeRozan. Lots of interest here in San Antonio, Jeff, and people can check out Locked On Spurs for all that info as stuff develops over the coming months. Jeff, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Yep, talk to you later, Josh.
Now it's time to bring in the host of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, Chris Manning, coming to us live from an airport. That's how dedicated he is to bring you all the Cavaliers information. Chris, Kevin Love has signed an extension over the past couple of days. First of all, were you surprised that this extension went down, and were you surprised with the amount of money that the Cavs ended up dishing out to Love?
I was surprised that it happened, just because they kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. It seemed like they had actually been talking about this since July 1st, once they knew LeBron was going elsewhere, and this was, it seemed to be Kobe Altman's first order of business this summer, so I was surprised by that. But I think when you saw them actually do this, I'm not surprised by the money. I think they saw this as a way to lock in a guy that can be the face of the franchise for the next four seasons. If he stays all 4 years, it takes some of the pressure off Colin Sexton, it takes some of the pressure off J.D. Osman, and it gives you a foundation piece. And the Cavs, I think, do want to try to be competitive without fully rebuilding. Now, what I am surprised about is there's no player option or team option in there. This is a four-year guarantee, and maybe this leads into it being a tradable deal later on. But I was surprised that it happened and the timing that it did, but the overall part of it, I'm not really surprised about.
That's the thing that's curious to me, is I can't really get my head around this, the whole where this trade or where this contract sits in terms of trade value. Of course, he can't be traded for 6 months after signing the extension, but that still does fall just before the trade deadline. So he still could be traded this season. But if we're talking about a guy like Kevin Love, who's going to be paid $30 million a year at the age of 34, he's not going to be worth that sort of contract then. He's locked in now for the next five seasons. So I feel like in a way it does. It opens up the pool of teams who'd be willing to trade for Kevin Love because there is that 5-year security, but it also closes off another area of teams who'd be interested in doing that trade just because they don't want to have to be paying Kevin Love $60 million for 2 years when he's 34 years of age. At that point, is that sort of how you see it, or do you think it makes it more tradable or less tradable as a player than he was before he signed this extension?
I think it becomes tradable if he can keep up his production and stay healthy in the next couple of years. I think where it becomes a tradable piece is if you're looking at a team that feels it needs one more piece and it needs shooting and rebounding specifically, and he, I think skill-wise he's going to age pretty well if he can stay healthy. I think that's where it becomes tradable, but it'll be context-based, right? Like if a team like Toronto needs to go all in, maybe they pony up young guys. Maybe a team that we're not thinking about yet, like maybe Utah or something, would come off in a couple of years and do this, or the Nuggets after Paul Millsap's gone from there. That to me seems like the type of scenario. I also do think the Cavs, if it comes down to it, would be very happy just to have for 4 years. I think that will certainly be the public line that they push. It is the line they're pushing now, but it would not shock me if they view him as a way to gap his 4 years, and maybe he's tradable on the last year more so than year two or year three. But I think this is a commitment by them to at least some degree that they feel he's the guy they want to lead them right now. And I do think that's a franchise that wants to establish a culture, wants to establish something as not of an identity beyond LeBron. And having Kevin LeBron helps you do that.
I think that's key as well. Like we all thought. There's some people were thinking that when LeBron left, they were going to be tearing it down, and everyone was going to be off, and Tristan Thompson was going to go, and Kevin Love was going to go, and then move on from George Hill, and they just J.R. Smith would be gone, and all that sort of thing. But the Cavs came out and said, no, we want to continue to be competitive. Now whether they will be competitive or not remains to be seen. But they're making the moves in that direction that they want to still try and put a competitive product out on the floor, with Love being that focal point. Now, we remember Kevin Love as being a guy who averaged 25 and 13 back 4 years ago as a member of the Minnesota Timberwolves. A lot has changed in the NBA since then, so I don't think, Chris, that we should be expecting Love to head back to that level of production, but he is going to be the clear number one option on this team, of course, unless Jordan Clarkson's on the court. But he's going to have that extra ability to up his usage and be this focal point of the team and bring the development of those other guys along. But the Cavs have also made noise about looking at Larry Nance as a player they want to invest in long term. How do you see the Love Nance pairing? Is something that they seem to be wanting to look at. Hey, this is our front court of the future. How do you see those two guys working together?
I like the idea of it a lot. I think Nance is, someone pointed out to me, something that didn't cross my mind, is if you can get Kevin Love throwing outlet passes, Nance is the other, is the kind of big you want that's going to speed up the floor, catch passes from him and dunk. And he's also someone I think they believe can improve his game. You can go back and look at the quotes, but they think he can shoot. And the Lakers thought that too, and I'm skeptical of that, but they think he can be at least an 18-foot jump shooter, and I think he's still getting better. And I think he's still adjusting to center. When he was with the Cavs last year, that was the first time we really saw him play center minutes for a long extended stretch. And because of some injuries, because of other things, there isn't a lot of data that tells us what to expect from the Love Nance pairing. And obviously any data from last year's Cavs is shaded by LeBron's presence, but we don't know a lot about it, but I like it on paper. I think they complement each other pretty well. And I think Nance is young enough where he can keep developing and getting better, and Love can kind of help him with that and take some of the pressure off him to have to be like a very good offensive player right now. I'm into Larry Nance. I do think he, when you look at the rest of the summer, they still have Rodney Hood out there. They have some other things they probably got to do to fill into the roster. I think the Larry Nance extension is the next thing on their to-do list.
What do you make of the Rodney Hood situation? There's talk that they are looking to bring him back. How confident are you that is what they'll be doing?
I think he's going to be back, but what I have a hard time guessing is what it is. Does he take the qualifying offer and play out next year and do that? Or does it behoove him in the Cavs to get him a shorter deal at a lower salary that maybe has an option somewhere in there that gets him on the free agent market again sooner rather than later? He gave an interview during the finals to Michael Pena advice, where he talked about wanting to have a team invest in him and invest in his potential and all these different facets of him as a person and ability to take that next level, like the Pacers did with Victor Oladipo. I would be shocked if he became as good as Victor Oladipo, but I understand what he's talking about. It would actually benefit the Cavs to do that. They've talked about wanting to be in the player development business. I'm skeptical of how good Rodney Hood will ever be, but he does have a kind of a modern skill set and a skill set that should be useful. But I think for the Cavs, you want to lock him up, but I think you don't want to pay too much at the same time. He hasn't proven to be a great player. The numbers don't love him. You look, his value of replacement is basically an average player. He doesn't produce a lot of RPM wins, hates him. There's not an advance that you can find that really likes Rodney Hood. And when you think about that, you think about how inconsistent he is, some of the deficiencies in his game, his injury history. I'd be skeptical of paying a lot of money. I actually do think at some point he's going to take his qualifying offer and he's going to be an unrestricted free agent next summer.
Interesting. So that's another guy there that they'll have to look at and try to mold this team with those young guys like Sexton and Osman, who you've already mentioned. Some interesting times in Cleveland as they try and battle and keep themselves in the playoff mix. It might be a tough ask, but you never know. That 8th and 7th seed could be wide open for Cleveland. Thanks, Chris, for jumping on. You can hear all of the Cavaliers off-season news over on Locked On Cavs. I'll let you get back and grab your luggage, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Josh, as always.
And there we have it, another episode of Locked On NBA in the books. Make sure you are checking us out and subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you can chuck in a 5-star rating, that would be absolutely perfect. Go ahead and do that. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net and me at Rock I'll try again, at me, at redrock_bball. Go and follow both of those accounts. Leave that review. Tell your friends. Share it around. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.